Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If the teachings and audios you find here at BethEmmanuel.org are a blessing to you, please consider supporting Beth Emmanuel with a gift, or become a member of our virtual congregation by becoming a regular contributor. To learn how to contribute, click on the Donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
Anyway, so Galatians chapter 4, we have this passage here in Galatians 4 where Paul seems to rebuke the Galatian Gentiles for keeping the Moedim, the biblical festivals, Moedim, appointed times, yes. And so an honest and impartial reading of this passage, if you take an honest and impartial reading of this passage, it really does sound like he's scolding them for keeping the holy days. I don't know if you've bumped into this before in reading Galatians, but it really sounds like he's scolding them for observing the biblical calendar. So I'm going to read you the passage, and you try to just like clear your mind. Just clear your mind and just read it. Just hear what is Paul saying, okay? Verse 9, Galatians 4. He says, "But now that you have come to know God, or rather be known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world whose slaves you want to be once more? You observe days and months and seasons and years. I am afraid I may have labored over you in vain. Brothers, I entreat you, become as I am, for I also have become as you are. He did me no wrong." So he rebukes them for observing days and months and seasons and years. And he warns them not to become, what does he say? Enslaved? Yeah, to whose slave? You want to be their slaves? You want to be the slaves again? And this leads us to view... This leads us to believe that Paul sees the celebration of, for example, say, the Sabbath and the festivals as a step backward for these Galatian Gentile believers, right? Okay. Now, little caveat, whatever he's saying, it doesn't apply to Jews. It does not apply to Jewish believers. We've seen in the theology of the apostles, there is no question for Jewish believers that they are covenantally bound to observe all the commandments, including these sign commandments, and such as circumcision and the Sabbath, which are a sign between God and Israel, it says. So, whatever he's saying here, and you know whatever it comes out to be, it doesn't apply to Jews. But it certainly does sound to me like he's none too pleased about Galatian Gentiles taking on the Sabbath, the holy days of the biblical calendar, because he says, you observe days, meaning Sabbath and festivals. He says, you observe months, meaning new moons. That's new moons, months, new moons. In other words, the calendar. He says, you observe seasons, meaning festival seasons, like counting the Omer, the days of Shuva, the days of Ah, and so forth. He says, you observe years, meaning the Shemitah, the seventh year, the sabbatical year, the year of release. And so in this regard, the passage is much stronger, even though when he says in Colossians, to the Colossian Gentiles in 2:16, where he says, let no one judge you in questions of food, drink, with regard to a festival, a new moon, or a Sabbath. So in Colossians, he simply says, don't let anyone judge you about this stuff. They shouldn't be judged for keeping the laws, for whether they keep the Sabbath, whether they don't keep the Sabbath. You shouldn't be judged for this. And that passage in Colossians is consistent with what we'll learn in Acts 15, Jerusalem Council, and so forth. But remember, what we're reading here in Galatians 4 is pre-Jerusalem Council, when this issue had not been settled yet. It was still a debate in the apostolic world. So it may represent a position occupied by the apostle Paul prior to the decision from Jerusalem Council, after which we find a more moderate position emerging from Paul's writings. For example, in Romans chapter 14, where he says, one person esteems one day above another, another esteems every day alike, each one should be fully convinced in his own mind, that the one who observes the day observe it to honor the Lord, and the one who eats it eat to honor the Lord. You know this passage. I explain it differently. I explain it, you know, that it's probably referring, I think, it's referring not to the Sabbath observance, but to observing days contaminated by idolatry or not. That's Romans 14. Another matter altogether. We're just poking around a little bit here. My point is that Paul is the later Paul, the older Paul. You know, it's a lot more moderate. The positions he takes are a lot more moderate. So it would appear to me that if we go back to Galatians 4, where Paul is still young, full of fire, the situation is a little bit more black and white for him. We already know what the context is. The God-fearing Galatian Gentiles are under the impression that they need to make a halakhic conversion to Judaism through circumcision, thereby going under the law. That is, taking on the commandments that apply specifically to the Jewish people, which would include the Sabbath and the calendar. And Paul is arguing against them making that conversion. So he chastises them for observing days, months, seasons, years. Now, traditional Christianity bumps into this passage and they handle it in exactly this way and teach that it's unchristian, therefore, unchristian to keep the Sabbath, to keep God's holy days. Of course, Christian tradition sees absolutely no conflict between Galatians 4:10 and Sunday, Easter and Christmas and Lent and Advent and so forth. No conflict there. But there's certainly, you know, there's a little double standard going on there anyway. Martin Luther, on the other hand, was completely honest with this and he said, no, there is a conflict. Shouldn't be doing that either. Martin Luther said, especially in his encyclical against the Sabbatarians, he said, you should not be keeping a Sabbath, not on Saturday, not on Sunday, not on any day. It's unchristian to do so. That's how it's handled. So essentially, Galatians 4:10, if we are understanding it correctly, is a rebuke of exactly what we're doing here at Beth Emmanuel, which in that event is a complete showstopper, if you know what I mean. In Galatians 4:10, if we're understanding this right, if we're understanding it to mean that God-fearing Gentile believers are not allowed or should not be doing these things, it's exactly the same thing as saying that they have no holy days. If you're a Gentile, if you're a believer, you have no holy days. You could watch, imagine this is what Paul's message would have been then, what he'd be telling these Gentiles and saying, you can watch the Jewish community do so, but you yourself are barred from participation in the Sabbath and the calendar. Locked out, so to speak, from God's appointed times. By the same argument, neither should the Gentile be allowed to start new holy days, Gentile holy days, his own holy days, whatever. No days of worship at all, in fact, is what we're going for, what the ideal here would be. It seems like, you know, that what Paul's saying is just like, oh, you know, it's all in the Spirit, you know, you just worship in the Spirit, and so you shouldn't really have to, like, have any sort of thing going on, you know, no formal religious observance or ritual, I think, sums up the position. No formal religious observance whatsoever. No days of worship, just peace and joy, but no actual formal religious observance. I wonder how well Paul thought this through. I don't know. I wonder how well he thought this through. You know, because I've had this experience. Have you ever had this experience where you hit send when you're really mad? You know, on the email? You've got the email or something, and you're just like, you know, you're just like, and you just type off some nasty letter, and then you you hit that send button, and then you go, uh-oh. I've done that, and you're like, that was stupid, you know, and you know, but you can't get it back. You can't get that email back, right? So sometimes I wonder if Paul hit send on Galatians a little too fast. I do believe that the theology in Galatians does, in all seriousness, I believe The theology in Galatians needs to be read in the light of his later writings. It needs to be held in tension with his later writings, and it needs to actually be interpreted through his later conclusions. Galatians is the first book written in the New Testament. Remember that. So I think that's true. I think that's true. I believe the theology should be read in light of Jerusalem Council, which had not occurred yet. But it's possible that the matter is not as simple, that Paul's words here are in, as in almost every single other passage that we have studied in Galatians so far, that Paul's words here are being misunderstood, that we're misunderstanding them. I'll show you some of the issues involved. If you just back up to verse 8, I'll show you what I mean. We'll read a little bit. Just one verse, verse 8. He says, formerly when you, and remember when we did this whole pronoun thing? Us, we, I, you, you all. Formerly when you all, and when Paul says you all, he means the Gentile believers in Galatia that he's writing to, and not the Jewish believers that he's representing. He says, formerly, when you, Gentile believers, did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not gods. This is idolatry he's talking about, obviously. Gentiles, what are they? They're Gentiles. That means they're in the Roman world, and that means they're polytheists. They, at least their background, this is where they came from. They came from a polytheistic background, which was idolatrous. They were actually required, as Roman, as people under Roman law, they were required to be part of the Roman cult, worshiping the emperors. Emperor worship. And, you know, the gods, whatever gods were around, you had to do it. If you, otherwise, you know, I mean, to be a part of it, you weren't an approved religious affiliation otherwise. So all the approved religious affiliations were idolatrous and polytheist, except one, and that was Judaism. Only Judaism. So it's interesting, you understand, I brought this point up before. Judaism was legal in the Roman Empire. You could be a Jew and not have to worship the idols and not have to worship the emperors. So it's interesting to me that Paul here is he's contrasting the Gentile believers with their former state. And their current state is different than their former state. Their former state was one that he calls enslavement to the idols. Their current state is one of knowing or being known by the one true God. So he goes on with this. Now verse 9, he says, but now that you have come to know God, rather be known by God, how can you turn back again to the weak, worthless, elementary principles of the world, whose slaves you want to be once more? What are weak, worthless, elementary principles of the world? Well, you know, here's the tough part. Here's the tough part. Last time we talked out of Galatians, we were looking at this. And by the context, I mean by the run of the argument as we're following it, coming off that pedagogue business and rolling into chapter 4 here, by the context, it sounds like the weak, worthless, elementary principles, you know, show up in verse 3, back, verse 3, where he says, Paul says, in the same way, we, Jewish people this time, we also, when we were children, in other words, before becoming believers, I think, we were enslaved to the elementary principles of the world. Huh. All right, so, but what Paul was talking about back there, there's, you know, being under the authority of the Torah and the, what is the elementary principles of the world? Lots of different opinions. How does Paul use the word stoichion? Has to do with elements that comprise a series. Remember this? We were talking about this already. Essential parts of something, members of a row, originally a military term for rank and file. In Paul's day, it was used to, the degrees on a sundial were called these elementary principles, these stoichion. Earth, wind, fire, air. earth, wind, fire, and air. The four elementary principles, the rudiments of a subject of study, writing, reading, arithmetic, elementary principles. So the word was used in various ways. No one's exactly sure how Paul's using it. That's a problem. But back to the problem at hand here. What it seems like is happening is Paul is equating these days, months, seasons, and years with the weak and worthless elemental things that characterized the Galatian Gentiles while they were still pagans. I need you to follow this argument. He rebukes them for turning back to the things they practiced while they were still slaves to idols. Things that they practiced before they knew God. So, at first blush, you might suppose, well, maybe the Gentiles are straying into paganism and he's warning them about pagan festivals and seasons. That just seems anachronistic, doesn't it? In Galatia, where Paul's, that's the wrong word, anachronistic. I don't know. It's contradictory. It seems contradictory. In Galatia, where Paul's problem, his problem seems to be, is this not his problem, that these people were becoming more Jewish than he wanted them to? So, how is it that he's like warning them, don't get circumcised, you don't need to get circumcised, it's okay, you don't need to become completely Jewish, and at the same time that they're becoming like all from, they're going into idolatry. It does, it just, I don't know. So, how did I... You might... This is actually not the first time I've been asked to explain this passage. So you might... I thought, well, how have I explained this in the past? Surely I've run into this before. Now I'm going to read you my notes. from the past. So here's what I wrote on this. I actually did write on this subject in Torah Club 5. And I pointed this out, that the word, the New American Standard, is translating here as, you observe. We would think that that's coming from the cognate, the equivalent to shamar, like you shall observe the Sabbath. It's actually not. The Greek word here doesn't mean to observe. It means to watch carefully. I'm not sure that's relevant. I don't know that that makes any difference whatsoever. But it removes it one step from that observe. You shall keep the Sabbath. And it makes me wonder if there wasn't sort of a superstitious thing going on here. Because if you think about it, under paganism, they watch the stars and the changing seasons for horoscope advice, right? Like auspicious times of the gods' favor and that sort of thing. And everything was accomplished through magical appeasement of divine impersonal powers. So a lot depended upon being in the right place at the right time. Magic, It's similar to a person who checks his horoscope before going out, and makes sure not to plan anything big for Friday the 13th. That's an appointed time. It might be that Paul is rebuking the Gentiles for misappropriation of God's calendar. Misappropriating God's calendar by assigning it these pagan virtues. So if the Galatians, this is just a thought, if the Galatians were reckoning the Moedim, the appointed times, the same way that they were thinking about conversion and Jewish status and circumcision, they would be reckoning it like, this is what I have to do in order to achieve the world to come, in order to achieve salvation. I don't know. Here's an interesting parallel from a book called Endless Light, by Rabbi David Aaron. When I ran across this, I thought of Galatians 4. He says, he's writing to someone who's a Baal Teshuva, somebody who's like turned back to Judaism. Alright? And this is what he writes. He says, I have to warn you that the mitzvot can be a form of slavery. if they are not practiced with the right intentions. The Talmud says a person can follow all the commandments to the letter and still be repulsive. Stronger yet, the Talmud warns that although the Torah is an elixir of life, it can be a deadly poison. How can that be? If a person performs the mitzvah to please another human being whom he fears or whom he wants to please, then it's another form of enslavement and idol worship. Depending on our intentions, the Torah can be an incredible journey of the soul or just another ego trip. For some people, performing the mitzvot to the letter is the goal unto itself, regardless of any real desire to bond with Hashem. So we must be cautious not to make the mitzvot into idols, as if they had an independent value outside of the context of a relationship with Hashem. If the desire to bond with Hashem is missing, the Torah and the mitzvot can become just other forms of idolatry and enslavement. This happened in ancient times, and it happens today. Some people adopt a Torah lifestyle because they are looking for social approval or just for escape. Seeking communal acceptance, they may imitate religious people, dress a certain way, behave a certain way, use certain common idioms. Clearly, mere mimicking of others and conforming to their behavior is not freedom. It is not bonding with Hashem. It's another form of slavery. Rabbi David Aaron, Endless Light. So maybe, I thought, you know, when I read that, I thought, maybe that's what Paul's trying to say in Galatians, to these Galatian Gentiles. Maybe he's saying to them, you have simply replaced the worship of idols with the worship of Judaism. I'm not sure. He goes on and says, brothers, become as I am, for I also become as you are. Which is not particularly helpful because Paul himself was an observant Jew, keeping the Sabbath and the festivals and the whole Torah, as we know. So it seems like a contradiction to his admonition against doing these things in the first place. So that's you wanted to know how I explained this. That's how I explained it. Maybe that's how I still explain it. I don't know. But there's one further problem that leaves me uneasy. If we accept that Paul is indeed speaking about the Sabbath, the festivals, and so forth, no matter what his intention or what it is he's trying to communicate, if we just go so far as to accept that, yes, that is what he's speaking about, then we must also admit that Paul is putting God's holy commandments, the holiness of the Sabbath, the holiness of the festivals, the holiness of the Torah, he puts all of these into a category that he considers no different than idolatry and that he refers to as weak and worthless elementary principles of the world. And that is troubling. That is very troubling. Because if that's what he meant, you know, I think that's problematic to the point of like close to blasphemy. Help us, Mark Nanos. You're our only hope. I've introduced you to Mark Nanos before. Nanos belongs to the school of Pauline scholars that are referred to as the New Perspective on Paul. Scholars who see Paul as an observant, practicing Jew who is not anti-Torah at all, but simply focused on the Gentile mission, comes across as anti-Torah because he's not talking to Jews. That's the assumption of the New Perspective school. And so Nanos, himself Jewish, a New Testament scholar, not a believer. His books, Mystery of Romans, Irony of Galatians, are considered on the very cutting edge of the New Perspective on Paul. What does Mark Nanos do with this passage? In an article he wrote called A Torah Observant Paul, Nanos argues that Paul is not speaking about the Jewish calendar at all. But rather, he's speaking about the pagan calendar. I already told you, that doesn't make sense to me. Because that's... you know why it doesn't make sense to me? Because it doesn't fit the context of what's going on in Galatia. The issue in Galatia is that Gentiles are converting to Judaism, not slipping back into paganism. Or is it? And this is where Nanos brings a new insight. And he's not alone. There's another scholar by the name of Justin Hardin who just released a book called Galatians and the Imperial Cult. And in that book, this scholar makes the exact same argument. Here's the argument. I'll sum it up for you. Paul's God-fearing Gentile converts were, of course, they were ex-pagans who had participated in the imperial cult. Everybody did. Of course they were worshiping idols and gods and the emperors as required by law. This was a critically important part of their previous way of life, as much a center to their society as getting a driver's license and a social security number is to ours. So observing the calendar of the imperial cult, it was a civic duty. And to abstain from participation in these civic religious functions would have seriously disrupted relationships, business relationships, club memberships. You're going to get kicked out of the golf course. You're going to have a problem with your mom, you know, because you're not going to be like, what? You're not coming over on Diana's day? You know, and stuff like that. It's going to be a complete disaster. A complete disaster. And more than that, more than a social disaster, it even places a person in jeopardy of persecution, state-sponsored, arrest, and even possibly execution for the crime of atheism, which was illegal in Rome. The only people with an exemption from this law were the Jews. We've learned this before, all right? But Paul's Galatian converts, as we've seen ad nauseum, were also not converts to Judaism, right? What I'm saying is they had not become Jewish. Paul's arguing with them not to become Jewish. So they were God-fearers. They were guests in the synagogue, you could say. They were guests. Though the Jewish community might have granted them an honorary guest status in the synagogue as God-fearers, that's not the same as having official state status as a Jew. It doesn't buy them any protection whatsoever just because they hang out in a synagogue. So claiming, hey, I'm a God-fearer, would not get you out of your duty to observe the imperial cult. This left the God-fearing believers in a state of complete social limbo that I think you can identify with. Not fully accepted by Judaism, and in conflict with the authorities, their extended families, their mom and dad, not to mention all of society around them. No place to belong. So what's the solution? The solution, it turns out, is obvious. The influencers come along, and they persuasively suggest, you know what? What are you killing yourself for? Just go the whole distance. Seal the deal. You're halfway there. Finish up. Just convert. It makes sense. It just, you know, what? You're a disciple of the Jewish rabbi and you're not Jewish. Come on. Seal the deal and you don't have a problem anymore with the state, with society. You got a membership here. It completely makes sense. No pressure anymore to conform to paganism or observe the imperial cult calendar. You're off the hook for that. So the Galatian Gentiles found themselves facing these two options. Option A, convert to Judaism and become legally Jewish. Or option B, at least on some level observe the calendar of the imperial cult. Those would be my options if I'm going to survive. And as we've seen, most were considering the former route, convert to Judaism, and I will bet you anything that most did, regardless of Galatians or not. I'm almost certain that most, at least in these early stages of the movement, most did. It's the most logical. But it may be that many others had already gone back to observing the events of the imperial cult and the calendar days, months, seasons, years, and their appropriate observances alongside their faith in Messiah, living in both worlds, a foot in both worlds, so to speak. It's an easy thing for a polytheist mind to do. You worship these gods on these days and you worship this god on that day. It's not such a big leap. If this is the case, then it's possible that really we should read Paul as speaking not to just the one option, but to both options, to both groups, and calling for a third option, which is identity in Messiah, not Judaism. An identity that completely breaks with those that by nature are not gods, to which they were formerly enslaved, but also maintains a distinct Gentile identity by not becoming Jewish. So this is how Nanos tells us to read it. So Galatians 4, 8 to 10 is his appeal to the Galatian Gentiles not to return to observing the imperial cult, the holy days, so to speak, of the imperial cult. And this, he argues, would be a return to slavery to those who by nature are not gods. Roman emperors, by nature, not gods, and yet by law they are. Do you want to be their slaves all over again? Paul is asking these Galatians. If this is how we should read it, then perhaps we should go back to 4:3 and reread from 4:3. Then maybe Israel, when it speaks of Israel being enslaved to the elementary principles of the world, is it possible that Paul has shifted metaphors on us without giving us a heads up, and it's not a reference to Torah at all, but rather a reference to idolatry? Was there ever a time when the nation of Israel was enslaved to idols? Yeah. Egypt, for example. How about all the history of apostasy through the Tanakh? Might Paul not be speaking even of the exile, of which it says in the Torah, the Lord will scatter you among the peoples from one end of the earth to the other. And listen to this, this is Deuteronomy 28:64. He says, and there you shall serve gods of wood and stone, which neither you nor your fathers have known. So Paul could be speaking of the exile. What is the exile? The exile is what happens before Messiah comes. It's before the messianic redemption, which Paul speaks of in the next verse when he says in verse 4, but when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth His Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive the adoption of sons. Now, I know this is a pretty radical rereading of Galatians 4, and I'm not even sure if it's the correct reading, but it's a lot more satisfactory an explanation. So here's what the passage is sounded. I know I'm going long. We're going to wrap up now. I'm just going to read this through. Galatians chapter 4, start at the top. Clear your minds and let me just work through this, you know, adding some paraphrases as we go for clarity. Verse 1, he says, I mean that the heir, as long as he's a child, he's no different than a slave, though he is owner of everything. But he is under guardians and managers until the date set by his father. What is the date set by his father? That's the messianic redemption. That's the redemption. In the same way, we also, when we were children, were enslaved to the elementary principles of the world. In other words, to other nations and gods, the gods of the nations, to Roman power, even in Paul's day, and under the authority of the Caesars. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth His Son. That's the Messiah. Born of a woman, born under the law. That means born Jewish. to redeem those who are under the law, not were, are, those who are under the law, that is, are Jewish, to redeem those who are Jewish, so that we might receive the adoption as sons, the final redemption. And because you, Gentile believers, are sons, God has sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, into all of our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So you are no longer a slave to idols either. I added to idols either. You are no longer a slave to idols either, but a son. And if a son, then an heir through God. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are not gods. But now that you have come to know God, or rather be known by God, you can turn back, or how can you turn back again to the weak and worthless elementary principles of the world whose slaves you want to be once more? You observe days and months and seasons and years of the imperial cult. I'm afraid I've labored over you in vain. Brothers, I entreat you, become as I am, which is Torah keeping, for I also have become as you. So what do you got here? Now this is three or four possible readings I've given you today. Which one is correct? Pick one. I don't know. I'm inclined to pick the latter. Not because it's the most obvious and natural reading arising from the context, but because it protects Paul from blasphemy and remains consistent with the rest of the Bible. And for that reason alone, to me, it has a lot of merit. Shabbat shalom.